Lieutenant Mamiya was a bald, old gentleman of exceptional height who wore gold-rimmed glasses. He had the tanned, healthy look of a man who has done his share of manual labor without an ounce of excess flesh. Three deep wrinkles marked the corner of each eye with perfect symmetry, as if he were on the verge of squinting because he found the light harsh. It was difficult to tell his age, though he couldn't have been less than 70. I imagined he must have been a strapping fellow in his prime. This was obvious from his erect carriage and efficient movements. His demeanor and speech showed the utmost respectfulness, but rather than elaborate formality, gave an impression of unadorned precision. The lieutenant appeared to be a man accustomed to making his own decisions and taking responsibility for them. He wore an unremarkable light gray suit, a white shirt, and a gray and black striped tie. The no-nonsense suit appeared to be made of a material that was a bit too thick for a hot and humid June morning, but the lieutenant was unmarked by a drop of sweat. He had a prosthetic left hand, on which he wore a thin glove of the same light gray color as the suit. Encased in this gray glove, the artificial hand looked especially cold and inorganic when compared with the tanned and hairy right hand from which dangled a cloth-wrapped bundle knotted at the top. I showed him to the living room couch and served him a cup of green tea. He apologized for not having a name card.
I used to teach social studies in a rural public high school in Hiroshima Prefecture. But I haven't done anything since I retired. I grow a few vegetables, more as a hobby than anything. Just simple farm work. For that reason, I do not happen to carry a name card, although I realize it is terribly rude of me.
I didn't have a name card either.
Forgive me, but I wonder how old you might be, Mr. Okada.
I'm 30, I said. He nodded, and then he took a sip of tea. I had no idea what he made of me being 30 years old.
This is such a nice, quiet home you live in,
he said, as if to change the subject. I told him how I came to be renting it from my uncle for so little. Ordinarily, with our income, we couldn't afford to live in a house half the size, I added. Nodding, he stole a few hesitant glances around the place. I followed his lead and did the same. Look all around you, the woman's voice had ordered me. Taking this newly conscious look at my surroundings, I detected a certain coldness in the pervading atmosphere.
I've been in Tokyo 2 weeks altogether on this trip, said Lieutenant Mamiya, and you are the very last person to whom I am distributing a keepsake. Now I feel I can go back to Hiroshima.
I was hoping I could visit Mr. Honda's home and perhaps burn a stick of incense in his memory, I said.
That is a most laudable intention, but Mr. Honda's home, and now his grave, are in Asaikawa, Hokkaido. His family came from Asaikawa to sort out the things he left in his house in Meguro, and now they have gone back. There is nothing left.
I see, I said. So Mr. Honda was living alone in Tokyo then, far away from his family?
That is correct. The eldest son, who lives in Asaikawa, was concerned about leaving his old father to live by himself in the big city, and he knew that it did not look very good. Apparently, he tried to persuade his father to come and live with him, but Mr. Honda refused.
He had a son? I asked, somewhat taken aback. I had always thought of Mr. Honda as utterly alone in the world. Then I assume Mr. Honda's wife must have passed away some time ago.
Well, that is a rather complicated story. Mrs. Honda committed lover's suicide with another man after the war, in 1950 or 1951, I believe. The details of that event are not something that I would know about. Mr. Honda never said too much about it, and of course, I was in no position to ask.
I nodded.
After that, Mr. Honda raised his children alone, one son and one daughter. When they became independent, he moved to Tokyo by himself and began...